SCP-8002, Maslov's Fire, Part 2. The SCP Foundation is nothing if not sensible and pragmatic. Emotions have very little to do with how they operate, and they are often forced into situations where they have to make hard decisions in order to save lives and maintain normalcy. Of course, this is a double-edged sword, and plenty of articles showcase how pragmatism can easily blend into callousness. SCP-8002 so far has been about the Foundation's primary medical center, where tens of thousands of personnel and civilians affected by anomalies can be treated using a miraculous system known as Cleric. Of course, there's something sinister lurking on the periphery of Cleric, and things seem centered around one specific woman, Andrea Maslov, a doctor of the highest degree. Let's continue. We pick up where we left things off, as Maslov is being directed on Overseer's orders to go with Sams and Torres, who she doesn't seem to care for. Before we find out exactly where she's being taken, however, we're given access to an addendum about Cleric requiring level 4 clearance. It's revealed that Cleric does not exist, and in fact, the healing energy perfusing SCP-8002 is not generated by any Foundation-made device, but rather a gargantuan biological entity, superficially similar to a flaming bird. For at least 3,000 years, this creature has lain inert, buried beneath the Earth, and SCP-8002 was constructed around it. Researchers believe, however, that this entity is regenerating itself after suffering a critical injury at an unknown point in the past. As it regenerates, it radiates tremendous energy from its body, healing any life near it in addition to itself. Obviously, this effect has been very beneficial to the Foundation, although estimates suggest that repeated exposure to the energy forms a dependence. Given the massive financial and logistical benefits of relying upon it, though, the Foundation has chosen to accept this risk. There's also a line redacted here. As of January 19, 2023, however, the entity is estimated to be nearing the end of its regeneration process, now releasing measurably less energy each day, greatly interfering with Foundation medical efforts. Estimates suggest that it may fully regenerate as early as February 12, 2024, ceasing its CR emissions entirely and emerging as a fully formed deific threat beneath the organization's largest hospital. There is currently no known way to force the creature to produce additional radiation or reproduce it independently. The Foundation has attempted a number of methods, including producing energy at the specific wavelength and EV of the CR emissions, producing the energy within the same room as the creature, producing the energy using a generator implanted within the creature, and re-injuring the creature to prolong the regeneration period. These all failed, however, as either their equipment just gets incinerated if it's near the creature, or the creature rapidly heals any damage the Foundation can manage to do. Whether a mechanism exists to injure it, or if this method would even result in renewed energy production, is not known. One final strategy has been devised by Dr. Sams and Director Torres, involving the recruitment of a key member of SCP-8002's medical staff. When asked, however, Maslov immediately says no, telling them to not hurt things without reason or sense, as nothing comes from this. When you hurt, you do not know how much hurt you will do or when to stop, and once you begin hurting, it is never ending. She is a doctor, so she does not hurt, she repairs. After a brief pause, Torres remarks that she lost that power, but Maslov replies that what she lost is nothing compared to the training she still has. Sams argues that she's seen for herself what that bird can do, so if she wants to help, this is the best way to do it. Maslov hesitates, but says she doesn't think so. Nothing good will come of this, and it could be worse. She was hurt badly and lost it all. Sams says that they have to try, as they have nothing else to lose, but Maslov disagrees. There's a pause as Sams and Torres look at one another before they say that they know that she relies upon the energy herself. They've seen the cameras, so they know she's used it to treat herself more than she should, as well as sneaking a script to a few people here and there. They assure her that they are not her enemies, but they know she sees the power that the bird has, and she wants it back. Maslov doesn't say anything, and Sams urges her to consider it, but Torres shakes his head, and they tell her that they won't coerce her, but they are in a crisis, and they need an answer within 12 hours. The two leave, as Maslov sits there, staring at her hands. Later, back in the hospital hallway, Maslov continues to stare at her hands as her tech approaches to ask if she'll see her 3 o'clock appointment, Henry Peck. She enters the room, finding Peck pacing inside, looking utterly disheveled. Peck had previously turned down cleric radiation for his condition, which she remarks upon. Peck, sweating and erratic, says that he tried other meds, and he slept on it, and he'd like to give it a try after all. He'd like to try it now. Maslov pauses and says that it's almost gone now, as cleric is nearing full shutdown. Peck says that yes, he heard about that, on his way over here. Maslov, however, counters that he knew about that long before he came today, as she has seen his charts. He went to Dr. Sams for a cleric prescription months ago, and has been on treatment since last March. Peck slumps and says he was too embarrassed to come back to her, and Maslov understands. You should never see a doctor for any reason if you don't want to. She remarks that Sams cut him off, and Peck says that he gave priority to another guy at his office, someone named Richards, but he never understood why. After that, he couldn't get any more treatment, as it's being tightly rationed. So instead, he went back on the medication she prescribed, but he started feeling terrible. He repeats the word terrible several times, before suddenly leaping up, stating that he's desperate. The pain came right back once he was off cleric, and he doesn't have much money or connections. He thought that she was so good to him before, and asks her to help him. He hasn't thought straight in weeks. He can't sleep. He can't even wash. Maslov replies that she cannot prescribe it. And it's not a matter of not wanting to. She is just literally unable. Peck begins panicking and yelling, clawing at his hair, before noticing the orange cleric switch in the corner. He leaps towards it, and although Maslov tries to say something, he curses at her and presses the switch. The cleric shields retract, but no light fills the room, and his jaw and Maslov's side do not catch fire. Maslov tells him that there's almost none left now, and they have to go far deeper underground to get it. Peck shakes his head slowly and continues pressing the switch repeatedly. He turns on Maslov and yells at her to make it work, before breaking down in sobs. He apologizes multiple times and says that he needs it so much. He asks her what he should do, and Maslov approaches him, crouching down with him. She touches his shoulder and tells him that he will live and fight as best as he can for now, and meanwhile, she will get him out of pain. Next, we're informed about Project 8002 Marrow, a last-ditch effort to injure the deific avian entity in order to spur its continued generation of life-saving medical radiation. The core of the project is Dr. Maslov, whose injury left her unable to utilize her healing abilities. Researchers believe afflicting a similar injury onto the creature will prevent its natural healing factor from trivializing the wound, forcing it to continue emitting cleric radiation in a longer-term attempt to recover. Maslov's tissue will need to be sampled and fashioned into a weapon for the attack to succeed. Maslov was initially resistant to this proposal, but has since agreed to participate. On February 12, 2024, at 10:17 p.m., SCP-8002 was evacuated except for essential staff, security, and patients who cannot be moved. Life support and anomalous stabilization is prepared for patients should cleric radiation production be altered by the project. Radiation detectors across the facility show that CR generation has fallen to a trickle, and the facility is dark on all floors above the core. At 10:31 p.m., six MTFs position themselves around the anomaly and building, supported by on-site staff. The payload is a 14-meter tungsten cylinder, and it hangs near the top of the creature's chamber, suspended from a shielded, jet-black mechanism. It will be dropped, not fired, as it cannot be adequately propelled due to its semi-reality, and at least one other indescribably intrinsic quality drawn from the anomaly reproduced from Maslov's blood. In the observation room nearby, Drs. Sams, Torres, and Maslov sit and watch behind successive layers of reinforced glass, with Maslov in a wheelchair. At 10:39, the MTFs are advised that the creature's regeneration is imminent, and all hands stand by for emergency action. A minute later, the seismographic and Hume sensors fire simultaneously as the chamber is bathed in a burst of white-hot flames. The glass in the room warps and the metal bends, but the payload and supporting device hold steady as the creature moves for the first time in nearly 3,200 years. Slowly, it stands, being over 30 feet tall at the shoulder, with a peering, mobile neck. It examines its surroundings, its head moving like a marionette's, not unlike that of a large hen. Its wings are folded at its sides, with huge red and gold folds awash in liquid fire. It is otherworldly, bright, and curious, raising its neck to peck at the roof of the tungsten dome before swinging down to peer inside the observation room. It lets off a squawk, louder than a jet engine, sounding somewhere between a goose and a car horn, causing Sams and Torres to jump. MTF Command gives the order to drop the payload, causing the antimatter strings to retract. The bird pauses, and as the payload begins to drop, it suddenly looks more closely into the observation chamber. It peers, clearly and intently, at Maslov, cocking its titanic head to one side. Its eyes flicker in the twilight. For a fraction of a second, sensors in the observation chamber detect a burst of cleric radiation, with the dosage exceeding the normal dose for 8002 critical care areas by 1,000 times, enough to sustain the entire facility for weeks. Maslov gasps and chokes, and her entire body is momentarily aflame in white-hot cinders. The payload falls, contacting the creature on its left shoulder. There is a single, blinding flash as the bird's flames go out, and the room plunges into pitch darkness. The bird emits a piercing, resonating cry and falls to the ground. Around it, the payload delivers its next attack, as swirling black poison pours over it, submerging it. This poison is achromatic sludge, the random junk left over from other anomalous processes, intended to worsen whatever damage the initial payload was able to cause. The bird rises, jerkily, to its feet, and then collapses again, before rising again. It jolts to the right, then to the left, trying to shake off the substance which drips thickly from its body. It cries out again, writhing and contorting its head and neck, pecking savagely at the wound on its shoulder. It staggers, slamming into the reinforced tungsten dome, shaking the observation room. Then it raises its wings, beating them against the rounded edge, trying to find a way out, or at least a higher place to perch. It continues to struggle for 10 minutes, calling intermittently and tearing at its wound, before falling weakly back onto its side. The creature then lies there, breathing heavily, giving hollow calls into the darkness. Its flames do not reignite, and radiation detectors show that its CR generation has abruptly ceased. Well, that sure was pretty awful, but it seems like they might have gone a little overboard in trying to injure it. Torres puts out another note to site administrators the following day, telling them that a spontaneous error occurred within the cleric system, causing it to cease function entirely. Right now, they don't have any way of getting it back online, and he wishes he had better news for them. They're working hard to come up with an alternative, but for now, it might be wise to hold back their MTFs from the field. He also remarks that the crisis on the East Coast, after an SCP got loose, is only getting worse. Their inpatient care facilities here are nearing max capacity, with 107,000 beds filled, but they don't know how to treat these cases without cleric. Thankfully, there's been a small miracle with Dr. Andrea Maslov. Many of them might know Maslov as the legendary Red's Red for her time as a field medic with MTF Alpha 1. She's a powerful healing reality bender who lost her abilities for many years, but yesterday something happened. They don't know why, but she woke up this morning with all of her healing power returned. The O5s have put her in charge of 8002's floor operations while they try and dig out of the cleric hole. He finishes by welcoming Maslov back and stating that they need her now more than ever. Maslov is walking briskly between rooms with a team of nurses, dispatching them around the floor as she's approached by Sams and Torres. She and her team continue walking without stopping, as Sams tells her that they need to speak with her about the cleric system. Maslov continues walking as they converse, and Sam says that, as she knows, there has been an error with the system which demands immediate attention. As a powerful healer herself, they believe she may be able to help with this. Sams leans in close, saying that they think there's a patient who needs her attention. Maslov replies, asking if he knew that they were addicting their own staff. Torres tells her to be careful of what she says in the presence of her nurses, as they cannot vouch for their safety. Maslov replies that perhaps they can't, but she can. The two of them are here to ask for her help, so they need to answer her question. The two men look at each other before Torres says that she's read the file, so they considered that there might have been a moderate risk. In other words, they knew, and Maslov asks if they exploited it. One of Maslov's techs hands her a photocopied copy of the bird's documentation, and she points to a highlighted passage, the redacted part from before. Sams is shocked that she gave a copy of this to her staff, but Maslov insists that they explain themselves now. The Foundation doesn't simply redact secrets. It redacts secrets which are bad for the Foundation. How many the Foundation has killed, how it hurts people, what goes on at the worst of its black sites. This is also a secret which is bad for the Foundation. She has seen maybe 2,000 classified files in 18 years in the red right hand, so she's correct about this. So, how might the Foundation think of widespread addiction in a positive way when they have so many employees that now want it badly and cannot find it elsewhere? Torres warns her that if she continues, but she cuts him off by stopping the group and turning on him. Everyone is silent as she raises a finger to his face, glowing white with pale heat. She tells him that he cannot threaten her anymore, and asks if they exploited this addiction. Sams admits that they knew perhaps since the radiation was harmless and even beneficial, it might be an effective incentive on rare occasions. Maslov asks if they evaluated MTF risk differently because of the radiation, because they could take greater risks and just be healed up. She saw that when she was in the field, how they were given worse dangers because they assumed she could just fix them up, but that's how four of her team died and she lost her healing for 3 years. Torres admits that, yes, of course, when they have a resource, they employ it to its greatest capabilities. Maslov cuts him off, asking her tech if she got that, who pulls out a digital recorder from her coat pocket Torres tries to argue, but Maslov cuts him off again, stating that she is now responsible for floor operations and saving hundreds of lives a day, and to be blunt, she doesn't trust them for shit. Neither, she should think, do the O5 Council. She has heard what they wish of her, and she will consider it, but for the time being, she tells them to kindly not waste her time. Maslov walks off, her entourage trailing after her, leaving Sams and Torres standing in the hallway. Later, Maslov is writing furiously in her office when her tech enters. Maslov interrupts her, saying that they have a busy day ahead as usual, and although she only got a few hours sleep, she says that it's under control. She tells her that they need to triage patients on sublevel 2, as the outbreak is worsening and critical victims are transported there from outlying areas. She will go there in a moment, along with any staff they have. The tech interrupts her, saying that she could use some help, showing her her bleeding right arm. Maslov leaps up and examines the wound, finding it to be green and jagged. The tech explains that she was passing an unattended hot room, and the door was cracked open. She didn't notice, and something reached out. Maslov tells her that she should know better, as they're in the depths of 8002, and she should remember the procedures. She stops herself, looking at the tech, who has begun to cry. The tech tells her that she feels sick, and Maslov agrees that she looks it, touching her forehead. She says that she's hot, then cold, and the fluctuations are too rapid. She has an anomalous rhythm, as something is trying to take her over. Maslov slams the door to the office, pulling a bar across it, and removes her gloves and coat. The tech asks if she is going to die, but Maslov tells her that she would never let that happen, and pulls her close. Maslov closes her eyes, as the room fills with a searing burst of multicolored light. The light is brief, but dazzling, and stains the papers on the desk. When it clears, Maslov collapses into a chair, and the tech's wound has vanished. She tells her that it's gone now, and she cleaned out the rest of her while she was at it, so anything wrong in there for the next decade has been fixed up now. The tech thanks her profusely, to which Maslov says that after how many times she has helped her find her glasses over the years, she can consider them even. Maslov is panting, and says that she burnt herself out now, though, and she can't go up to the ward for a bit. She tells the tech to sit with her for a bit, and the two sit together as the building around them fills with screams. The tech hesitatingly asks her how she got her powers back. Maslov pauses and says that she was healed by something much bigger and stronger and better than her. She's not sure why or how, as perhaps it felt benevolent or just curious, but it thought of her for a small moment. She hates to think, though, what she gave back to it in kind. Later, Elizabeth, the woman from before that was addicted to cleric treatments, and her wife Vivian are in the hallway at 8002. Elizabeth is crying, the wing is in disarray, and the floor is shaking. Maslov sees them and gasps, asking what they're doing here. The three embrace, and Vivian explains that with this crisis, they've been displaced. Elizabeth needs anomalous care, so they bounce them between four different sites, but nobody could handle them, so they sent them here. Maslov doesn't understand, as 8002 is for MTFs and civilians now, but she's glad she found them. She turns to Elizabeth, who is still crying and holding her leg. Maslov admits to Vivian that she was right, and cleric radiation is no good, but Vivian now disagrees. They tried the other prescriptions, all of them, but none of them did anything. The radiation was the only thing that worked, and they need it back. Maslov insists, however, that they must not use it, and besides, they'll never repair it, as the damage is too great. There's plenty that they can do themselves, however, and she brushes her hands over Elizabeth's legs. She pauses her crying and smiles. Maslov says that for many years, she believed that the Foundation was working for them, but they are not. They must learn to be strong themselves. She stands and removes her hands, but as soon as she does, Elizabeth begins crying again. She crouches and touches her again, but as soon as she releases her hands, Elizabeth cries again. Maslov is confused, as this should heal her, not just help with the pain. There's some shouting down the hallway, and Maslov's tech tells her that they should go. Elizabeth and Vivian both beg her not to go, and Maslov looks to her tech, telling her that she just needs a few more minutes. But the tech shakes her head, saying that there is no time. Outside, in a massive makeshift tent, are the entirety of MTF Omicron 112, consisting of 218 individuals. Nurses are moving about, and many of the soldiers are convulsing rhythmically. Maslov moves from bed to bed, healing them, and those she touches cry out before falling back asleep. She's about halfway through when she comments on how she forgot how draining this can be. A man calls out to her, Lieutenant Tuck, whom she treated before, and she sees that he's burnt from his chin down to his waist, with the wound simmering. Tuck explains that some kind of tendril got him pretty good, but that's how it goes. His voice is weak, and he's having trouble breathing. Maslov touches him, and her hands glow white as she tells him that they're not done with him yet. Tuck gasps and says that he can see why she was a medic. She sits down heavily on his bed and says that yes, she is very good, the best there is. But even still, she is only just keeping up. It was just like he said, that they don't know what to do without the radiation. They need more help with this crisis, as there are too many affected. Tuck tells her that he knows she'll handle it, and she says that she'll have to, as she'll never be trusting them again. Tuck then gasps again, to which Maslov says that she fixed him just moments ago. She touches him again, and he gasps and calms down. She tells him to hold it together, as she has many yet to go. Tuck tells her that when he came in before, she said something that really comforted him. She told him that it was okay to trust them if you do it for you, that sometimes that's how you help yourself. Maybe she can use that too. Maslov begins to argue, but Tuck gasps again and begins choking. She lays her hands on him, causing him to glow, but he doesn't stop choking. She calls for a code blue and compression, but nobody is listening as the clamor around her is too loud and her tech is attending to another patient on the other side of the room. Tuck collapses onto his bunk, his body falling still. Maslov swears in anger and begins pacing the floor as soldiers nearby watch her anxiously. She yells that she got it back, but continues pacing before stopping and staring up at the moon. She finally says, "Fine. The Foundation knows that it addicts, and they use it to exploit them, overwork them, and trap them. Well done to her for figuring it all out. But she saw what the bird itself will do if allowed." She walks over to the field telephone and dials up Torres, telling him that she's willing to do it now, but she has conditions. Inside of the bird's chamber, the phoenix lies motionless, pressing itself back against a wall. It breathes heavily, and without its flames, it's revealed as multicolored, with a golden head and neck over red and green wings. Its eyes are electric, the color of molten metal, and its legs, now strewn out beside it, are the same color, an intense, brazen orange. On its left shoulder is a dark, oozing injury the size of a vehicle. At the far end of the room, a door opens, and Maslov enters. A team of researchers, including her floor staff and Sams and Torres, watch from the observation room. Maslov turns to the Phoenix and says that it's time they get to know each other. The Phoenix's breathing has increased in volume to sound like wind, and as Maslov approaches, it jerks away, clawing at the wall. She stops and raises her hands in the air, telling her that she is a beauty and she must come near to help. The bird eyes her as she takes one hesitant step, then another, pausing each time to wait for the creature's breathing to slow. Gradually, it calms, moving its massive neck out from the edge of the room to look more carefully at her. Maslov takes a faster step, but the bird hisses and darts away, causing Maslov to yell to let her help it, calling it stupid. The bird peers at her with its molten eyes, and she says that she will show it something that she does not show many. She lifts her scrubs and undershirt, exposing her left side. Where her wound used to be, there is now a snake-shaped scar winding along her torso. In the Phoenix's presence, it seems ethereally pale, and the bird uncurls very slightly while peering at it. She tells it to look if it likes, as they are the same, she thinks, what this was and what its is. Some kind of terrible magic. The Phoenix moves closer, extending its neck out to peer carefully at her side. Maslov says that she is a healer, like it is, but even she could not heal this, despite trying for years. It took away most of her power just to keep her alive, and she's much weaker from it, even now, she thinks. She's also afraid that they got their wounds the same way, from evil idiots attacking them in ways they knew not. The Phoenix moves its beak close to Maslov, who tenses but doesn't back away, and it lets out its enormous red tongue, gently licking Maslov's side. She tells it that it is gross, as it emits a loud squeak. She says that it's so noisy as well, but now it needs to let her near. She steps towards the Phoenix's shoulder, and it doesn't back away. Maslov examines the colossal wound, eventually picking a spot. She tells it that she doesn't guarantee that this does much, as they both have lost something of what they could do from before, but she will at least try. She has other things in mind as well. The Phoenix looks at her, blinking slowly, and she asks herself why she bothers talking, as it's like talking to a giant chicken. She turns back and touches the bird, pressing both of her hands against its wing at the edge of the shoulder, and moving her hands slowly together to form a triangle with her fingers at the very edge of the wound. She closes her eyes as the Phoenix relaxes, laying its neck out on the ground. She tells it that now she will get it out of pain. Her hands begin to flicker and blur, followed by her arms, her torso, and her whole body. Then the Phoenix itself begins to blur, starting from the point of contact and spreading outward to surround and encompass the whole injury. The bird's eyes, watching her work, are alive with internal light. The wound and Maslov dance like a mirage has fallen over them. They are distorted and strange, half-transparent in the dim security lights. She yells that she will not succumb, as she braces herself, leaning her whole weight into the Phoenix, and screams. Her body is a single, vibrating point of distortion. The Phoenix then calls, suddenly and loudly, as a host of radiation alarms around the room go off altogether. At the very tip of the bird's tail, a tiny blue flame bursts suddenly to life. Maslov collapses, and guards rush in to surround her, but the Phoenix screeches and whips its neck around to push them back. It wraps around Maslov, enveloping her tightly in its feathers, hiding her from sight as a muffled groan is heard. We're then given a new file for SCP-8002, still with the Thaumiel object class, but now with Andrea Maslov as its director and research head. It also notes that this document describes a core infrastructural element of the SCP Foundation, and no part of it ever is to be classified for any reason. SCP-8002 is a 503-acre subterranean megastructure operated by the Foundation, which was previously taken up by the organization's main hospital and medical center. As of February 19, 2024, it also serves an additional purpose of regeneration and medical support for 8002-1, a deific entity superficially similar to an enormous golden pheasant. This entity was the source of the radiation which once permeated the facility, and its current injuries, inflicted by the Foundation in an effort to force higher radiation output, prevent it from emitting more than a trace amount. 8002 remains the Foundation's primary hospital, but without the benefit of cleric radiation, much of the institution's previous operations are critically compromised. This situation has been further complicated by strikes and coordinated organizing by hospital care staff, largely supported by newly appointed site director Andrea Maslov. Due to a pre-existing agreement between the O5 Council and Maslov, made as a condition for the director's care of the Phoenix, the following measures have been approved for staff. Hiring budget has been increased by 600%. Training budget has been increased by 800%. Overtime pay and sick pay for all staff has been increased. New measures have been introduced to reduce unnecessary deployment of MTF, and facilities and infrastructure have been updated to support operations less dependent on CR. Through increased staffing and careful rationing of CR access, Director Maslov succeeded in resolving an ongoing care crisis at the facility and across the U.S. East Coast. Her paradigms have since been implemented to begin more sustainable care for anomalously afflicted patients. At present, the facility is operating sustainably at approximately 26% of its previous capacity, without relying on more than a passing amount of the bird's healing radiation. When its abilities are used in care, rigorous protocol is in place to ensure limited and transparent employment of its effects. Dependence is monitored, and staff are training in appropriate prescription. Most importantly, patients are informed of the risk associated with long-term exposure. The lower third of the 8002 complex has been redesigned as a containment and rejuvenation facility for the Phoenix, in hopes that the creature may be restored to its previous capabilities. However, regardless of its ultimate contributions, the Foundation is dedicated to sustaining and supporting the creature for the remainder of its natural life. In creating care for such a complex entity, the Foundation invested heavily in a wide variety of state-of-the-art support for anomalous beings. It's been suggested that these systems may be used for care of other injured anomalies, incorporating care for such entities as part of the organization's hospital system. This proposal has been approved, designated as Project 8002-SOUL. 36 anomalous entities are now cared for on-site, with more scheduled for admittance in the near future. The Phoenix remains in good condition, and has begun to emit an increasing quantity of cleric radiation, growing at a very small rate per day. The entity is alert, calm, and, according to Maslov's reports, warm to the touch. I imagine more than some of you thought that Maslov might sacrifice herself to save the Phoenix, or that the Phoenix would end up dead, or some other grim ending. Instead, not only are both the Phoenix and Maslov alive and well, but Maslov was able to institute real change into how the Foundation handles the treatment and care of both their own personnel, but also civilians and even anomalies. It's not hard to see how the Foundation ended up in the position they were in, though. Much like how SCP-2000 is often discussed as a general get-out-of-jail-free card for disasters, the Foundation here had a miraculous healthcare system that could patch up practically any wound. What's the harm, then, in sending your soldiers into dangerous situations, comforted in knowing that they'll be just fine afterwards, and if they happen to become addicted to that healing, that's certainly not going to stop anything. And while they're usually not in the business of purposefully harming innocent anomalies, the Phoenix was their golden ticket, so some hard decisions had to be made. Of course, as it turned out, Maslov was able to show how not only were they all idiots, but they were also callous and cruel. I think, like many other articles, this one could have gone in a number of different directions, and we certainly got pretty much the happiest one. With Maslov having so much pull now as far as the Foundation's medical systems go, it's likely that they'll be able to use the Phoenix's powers eventually to do a lot more good in the world than before. The article was about rebirth in more ways than one, as well as the benefits of treating people decently.